Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latah Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said earlier, I am Radio Johnny, and I am joined in the recording studio / conference room with the fabulous Miss Denise.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, everybody. Glad you're here, Denise.
Thank you.
I make this
Glad
thing work so much better. Really
Technology
appreciate it.
Is tricky sometimes.
Yeah, it can be fun. We were playing plug this in, plug that in, remember to put this switch on, etc. earlier.
And it was, microphones.
Yeah, she cheered me on as I struggled through the really dumb thing I forgot to do.
Because I don't know what to do with it. You're the only one who knows how to fix it, so.
That's right. And it is now May. Happy May Day, May 1st. And Denise, you have an announcement for an event coming up that you're very interested in.
Yes. So at the Latah Recovery Center, we offer a support group for families who have a friend or a loved one who struggles with substance use. And we are starting that class up again on May 7th. That's a Wednesday from 5:30 to 6:45 p.m. And you can call the LRC at 208-883-1045 and ask for Denise or Sean. And we can answer any questions for you or we can get you signed up. We will be working out of a workbook that the ITC has for supporting us in this. We'll be working through different kinds of things to help us walk alongside of the other people, our loved ones, better, and then also to support ourselves.
Fantastic.
Thanks.
So that's next week, next Wednesday. It's coming right
yes,
up.
Yes, it sure is. And we would just love to have you join us.
Fantastic. Well, good-o, Denise.
Thanks.
And today, Denise came up with what I think is a fabulous topic, and that's dealing with, in recovery, we do a lot of work. We do a lot of different things, none the least of which is something we talked about last week, our fourth step, which is where we take an inventory, basically, of ourselves. And a lot of people, I think, labor under the illusion that once you do your fourth step, you're good.
Right. You just go once through all the steps, and then that just carries you for the rest of your life.
Right. Right. And turns out that's not exactly true.
And you know what, though? That's kind of okay, because if you look at it as tools, things that you use when you need to, that's really helpful.
Right. Exactly. And I was talking to Denise before the show while we were struggling with technology about a fellow who I spoke with just recently. And he's been in the program for a number of years, but he was looking for a new sponsor and asked me, and I told him that, you know, you've been through all the steps already and been practicing the principles in all your affairs for quite a few years now. So I don't think it would be all that beneficial to go all the way back to step one and run through that. I know some people just do it because that's what they do. But, you know, for me, I think it's more important to be available to get to the meat and potatoes of what's
going on today
with somebody.
Right.
And this idea that Denise came up with, the spring cleaning, that's genius, because we all need to review what we're doing. Maybe, you know, if you're rigorous in the AA program, the 10th step, we, you know, basically review our day and see if we screwed up somewhere.
Owe somebody an amends.
And
owe
them amends and set out to do that. But, you know, the idea of just a general spring cleaning,
right?
I really like where you focus on like the whole past year. Mm-hmm. And because, well, for me, I'll just share this and I'm going to throw it to you. Yeah. But for me, when I have gone through four steps with new people, they will say things that jog my memory.
Right.
You know, or they will mention things that they feel result of a character defect, you know, and a resentment that they have. And I'm like, oh, I never looked at that way before. So maybe I owe amends here that I hadn't even thought of. So a spring cleaning, that's great to, you know, really dive deep, you know, just do a odd four step,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, out of synchrony. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So what do you think about that?
What I was thinking was like spring cleaning your recovery over time in recovery. We've all made a lot of choices or changes, because our lives have become unmanageable. And now we still need to assess our lives to see what is working and what is not. So like in my life, I've got different kinds of things that I attend each week and do, you know, in my schedule each day, each week, each month. So thinking about that, you know, like what kinds of those things support me the best? Is there any changes I need to make in that? Do I need to get rid of anything? Am I too overloaded? Do I need to add something? So as we look at our daily routines, weekly and monthly schedules for work, play, and social time, are these things supporting our new way of living, our values, and our recovery? And then, you know, just kind of thinking about that. And then I went a little further with, are we taking care of our bodies? Are we eating, exercising, seeing a doctor when needed, and for like preventative care kinds of things?
Mm-hmm.
I think it doesn't really matter how old you are. You can go to the doctor and get once a year blood work done just to kind of see how things are going. It's definitely a wise idea at our age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely at my age. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, things like, are we getting adequate sleep? And also, like, are you having sleep interruption? Are there things that you're waking up thinking about in the middle of the night or in the morning that are causing you urgency? Are you listening to that? Like, what can you do to address those different kinds of things? Are you getting time with your loved ones and your friends? And or is it literally time to clean your house or clean out bad influences? We're all people in recovery, and we work on making good decisions for ourselves now. So just taking some time to think about, you know, it's springtime now. I know for myself that with extra light and stuff like that, I've been cleaning my house more often because the longer days, I'm noticing more dust. And so I'm, you know, more sunshine is giving me more energy. And so I'm literally cleaning up my house.
Right.
But are there things in our lives that we need to kind of clean up or change or add?
Right.
You know, like what works for you?
Yeah. And thinking about it, you know, thinking back on my working career in particular, so much changes in a year. You know, your responsibilities grow. You're writing a proposal right now, which you've never done that before.
I've never done that before. Growing pains.
Yeah. And
literally.
And, you know, just thinking back on your last year here, mm-hmm. I mean, you've only been a full-time employee
for about a year and 8 months, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's still fairly new, and you've learned a lot.
Yeah.
And
I've made changes.
Yes, and you have to, because what worked in a previous situation is not necessarily going to work in your current one. I'll give an example. Before I went to work for that company that will remain unnamed, but its initials are SEL, I had supervised crews of electricians out in the field. So I was on the road. I had to deal with them partially English, partially Spanish, because not all of them were English first languagers, mm-hmm. so to speak. We were working at night in facilities. I had to direct them. There were times where there were disciplinary things that had to be discussed. And that was a whole different world from sitting on an assembly line where I started at SEL, mm-hmm. Putting parts in, working with others, you know, not being the boss.
Right. Ooh, imagine that. That's a big change, honestly.
So a big step in a different direction. I won't say down, because every job's important.
Right.
So you have, I had to review what I was doing, how I was thinking, to make that work better, you know, for the people around me. Because I caught myself being bossy. Oh, you should do it this way.
So did you need to make any changes to support yourself in this change?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. First of all, I had to, you know, realistically, I had to humble myself, because I was letting my ego get in the way of being the most useful I could be, you know, to the company and to the people around me.
Doing the job that you were asked, yeah.
It's a different
position.
And not being an arrogant prick. So yeah, so I had to make those changes. And then within a few years, I moved from the assembly line up to the documentation group, where I had a little bit more authority, and I was the senior guy for a while in that. So, you know, I had different responsibilities and more. Mm-hmm. But it was really great, because I brought that process with me, you know, about change. I never looked at like this spring cleaning. Mm-hmm. It would just be, wow, people are either, you know, getting irritated with me, or they're short with me, or mm-hmm. it's like, okay, you know, are they just being jerks, or am I?
Right. Do I need to look at something?
Right. And, you know, easier to look inside than try and figure out somebody else. And yeah, and it was me. I was carrying over behavior that just didn't work in that situation. Mm-hmm. It can be like life altering, like not drinking anymore as a change, mm-hmm. or it could be as simple as, no, I need to be a better listener.
Right.
In this environment, like your job right now.
Right. Yeah, I've definitely improved in my listening skills working with people. And that was different than my previous job, where I worked part time doing a more physical job. You know, it was a completely different situation. And so there was a lot of an adjustment moving into this job mm-hmm. versus the other one. Amount of time hours here, you know, being full-time versus being part-time. And that actually was a change, not only at work, but also at home. So what kinds of things did I need to move around, and what kind of schedule did I need to have to be able to support still making sure my house is clean, and then my kids are tended to, and I've got groceries and all those kinds of things. So schedule changing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all of these things, you know, just looking at how are all these things working? Do I need to add a counselor or any kind of other services? Do I need to spend more time with friends? Like, are you getting poured into, you know, love and hugs and all those kinds of things?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in my house, I'm a big hugger, and I'll go up to my kids and be like, hey, I'm hug deprived. I'm going to need a long hug. Like all those kinds of things. Like, are you feeling kind of grumpy or frustrated? Okay. What's going on? What could support that better? Because it's everything from our daily routine to how we interact with people to how we're feeling inside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I don't know about you, but I don't want to live upset and grumpy and angry. So what do I need to change? What's my spring cleaning? You know?
Right.
Yeah. So the concept is kind of like this big idea. And I like how you talked about looking back over your last year. Like it sounded like, you know, you were talking about, how are your relationships with people? Do you need to apologize to anybody? Do you need to do a fourth step with things? And in my mind, I was thinking, like, do you have all the activities in the week that support you well? Are there people that you need to spend more time with or less time with? Yeah.
Right.
Are you taking care of your physical health?
Right. Can, no, absolutely.
Yeah. It'd be so many things.
And every year I get a reminder call from the good people at Moscow Family right. Medicine to come in and have my turn your head and cough meeting with the doctor yep. and go see Dracula down the street here and get some blood drawn and find out what's wrong there.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very fortunate. I'm actually in better shape than I deserve for the abuse I put my body through for so many years. But yeah, no, I do those things. You know, I'm dealing with a particular issue with a couple of cysts growing up in my brain region. And so I go every year and I get scans, and they look at them, and they say, okay, you know, whatever, come back in a year. Mm-hmm. They haven't used the S word yet, you know, surgery, which is great because, you know, my brain is my second favorite organ.
I mean, it's pretty important.
That's right. It is important. I get responsible for those things, but then there's other things that, you know, I have to look at. Like, I seem to have increased my caffeine intake, or actually in this last year, I've actually decreased my caffeine intake. You know, should I take that as a win?
Right.
I mean, it's good to review things and realize the good habits you've built over a year that maybe you actually, you know, made a New Year's resolution on. It's like, I'm going to quit smoking, which is crazy talk. But there might be other things. It's like, I'm going to make my bed every day.
Right. I love that, you added
I'm
gonna in.
I'm going to fold my clothes and put them away right out of the dryer.
Celebrating these things to, like, remember all the things that you have accomplished and all these changes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love that. Yes, please, please, please make sure y'all do that.
Right.
It is so important.
Yeah, and the four-step inventory. In the book it says, you know, you need to learn about the stock and trade. And it talks about getting rid of the bad stuff, but that also means you're identifying the good stuff.
That's right.
The stuff that you are keeping. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're right. You know, it's important. You know, maybe over a year's time, you realize a relationship is not what you had hoped it would be. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's time for a change there and being honest about it. You also talked about time for yourself. And that's a tricky one for me, just for me, because I'm fortunate that in semi-retirement, I mean, I still do a job, a little part-time job, and there's this that I do every week. I really get to choose everything I want to do and everything I don't want to do, which, you know, in the workaday world, you know, if you're one of the really lucky ones and fall into a job that you absolutely love, and I'm kind of at that place now where everything I'm doing, I'm happy with.
Nice.
You know, I'm connecting with people. I've got my AA family that I do things with. I have a great friendship with you in working with this program.
Yeah.
So, you know, I realize that's not normal, or that's not typical, I should say, for most people. But it still takes some work to maintain, you know, the friendships and the relationships. You know, I could have a bad day at work and do a crappy job, and the boss might, you know, it was like, wow, you really didn't clean that toilet out. Looks like somebody had a horrible situation there. You know, that could happen. I mean, for sure. And there would introduce a change there. But somebody who's working like you, single mom, preteen and teenage girls.
Teenagers, 14 and 16.
Yeah, teenage girls.
Yeah, God, I love those kids. Yeah, and then the two adult ones and their grandkids. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, your plate is like incredibly full. So paying attention to that is super important.
Right, that's kind of the thing. It's like I was literally driving to work this morning going, you know what? I'm finally like living what most people have been doing most of their lives, working 40 hours a week or plus, you know, and navigating being parents. And gosh, you know what? It's hard to balance that time with making sure that when I come home, I'm still connecting with the kids and sitting with them and, you know, talking to them about what's going on and stuff, and then getting all the other things done. Most of my life, I've worked part-time. And that's really been a blessing in the sense of being done work by the time they get done school, or being, honestly, I got to stay home with my kids before they went to school, all four of them. And so, this is new. And so it has been a bit of a balancing act. And that's part of why I thought of this as well, because my time is real precious when I get done work. And so what are the things that I need to go do that support my recovery and support, you know, my values and my goals and my kids? And what are the things I just can't do? Some things like Monday Night Life Group. I'd been going to that for years, but now with adding some other things on Tuesdays, I'm really just not able to do that. I miss those people, but I just can't be gone that night too. So Yeah, that's kind of what I mean. Just what is working? What is working? And making sure that you're still doing the things that are important, spending time with your kids, work, whatever that looks like. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, our time's valuable.
It is, and finite.
Yeah.
You know, you only get 24 hours in a day.
Right. What are you going to do with it? Who are you going to spend time with? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Who are you going to spend time with? Just dividing that up. I mean, I remember back in the day, you know, when married, we didn't have any kids, but, you know, we had all sorts of obligations we put ourselves in. You know, even before sobriety, I mean, there were events to be scheduled, and, you know, we did a lot of, my wife did a lot of fundraising that I was kind of obligated to be a part of, you know, the men's support group. So finding time to be with friends and being in a group of people who, there's a certain age, like in the, 20s, it's probably in the 30s now, where people start pairing up and getting married, and your circle of friends and your friend events get different.
Yeah, they do.
You know, it's like, we never see him anymore. Oh, he got married. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a death scene. He went to prison. No, it's not exactly it. Mm-hmm. It's just his needs and his relationships have grown, and I'm still a loser, you know. But so, yeah, it gets different. And in that just life all the time, it gets different all the time.
It does. I was going to say, you earned your ability now to just work a little part-time kind of stuff and have your time to meet with your guys, do your AA thing, do some traveling. Like, you put in your time working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. After, you know, basically first job I had, I was 14 years old working in a cabinet shop, you know, sweeping the floors, helping the painter out. Getting whacked out of my mind, breathing lacquer paint. That was
not so good,
a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and, you know, working, you know, full time up to age 65, that's a long time.
Right.
And, you know, I enjoyed some of it. I didn't enjoy all of it. Right. But, you know, working in the tech industry down in the Silicon Valley, down in California, I did learn a lot, and even though we got, you know, regularly laid off, my friends used to joke, it's like, who are you working for now? I need to adjust my portfolio. Mm-hmm. You gain something from every job you have if you're paying attention, and I was able to do that. So, you know, now not only do I get to have time to pursue the things I really want to pursue, things that I'm passionate for that maybe I couldn't afford or didn't have the time to pursue in the past, I get to do that now, and with a wealth of knowledge, skills, abilities, you know, that I wouldn't have had in my 20s.
Right.
There's a weird thing going on now, just kind of going on a side note. A lot of young people now are like taking 10 years off before they start their career. You know, they'll work a few years, build up, you know, say enough money to put a down payment on the house, a couple hundred thousand dollars, and then take 2 or 3 years off and just like travel and, you know, behave like they would in retirement, except they pre-retire.
Wow.
And then come back after their 5 years or 10 years of retirement, which is, you know, not unusual for people to have from 65 to 75, except they get to do it when they're still in good shape. Their bodies aren't falling apart. They're not having hot flashes, you know. It's a different way of doing it. I don't know if it's really wise in this current economy with everything changing. I mean, you might save that money up, go out and do those things and come back, and your field that you chose has been taken over by AI.
Yeah, I don't know that I've heard of this. My parents were working real hard and they were going to retire in their 40s. They were definitely well on their way. So,
yeah.
But then, you know, sometimes you die young. So,
yeah, you things never know. Get interrupted. Yeah.
Yep, things can change. But, that is interesting. My middle daughter talked about taking like the summer between high school and college and traveling, which I get. Hopefully she won't take too long. I mean, it's possible she might decide to take a year and travel around. She's kind of a little hippie and all. Who would have guessed, right? But yeah, I mean, I think knowing ourselves and figuring out how much time do we need to vacation or travel or to just sit on our porch and look at the beautiful sunshine and the flowers, just knowing yourself, that ability to be self-aware and support yourself well now in recovery. I think back to a lot of the things that derailed me, and I try to do different. Like, what were the things that caused my life to go sideways? And I kind of try to steer clear from that as much as possible, really try to learn, because my crashing and burning and the fiery flames that went up around, you know, right before I got into recovery they were pretty significant, you know, and they affected myself and my family immensely, you know? Right. So I think I try to steer clear of those things. And right. I love what I'm doing with my life now. It's just so amazing. And honestly, I guess those really hard times are what got me to understand things to where I am now, to where I'm able to work with people. So, I mean, that part's a blessing. It's a shame. I wish that it didn't affect others. If I could change that, I would be like, if it just affected me and it didn't affect anyone else, my choices, that right. would be awesome.
Right.
But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. And I've had to forgive myself for that. So, yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, in our, you know, ninth step, we do the amends to people, and way too many times, especially in a family environment, our amends just tend to be a living amends, just like, correct. Don't do that anymore.
Correct. That's right.
You know, don't be that person anymore that, you know, has to use or drink to cope with life on life's terms.
And what that does for family members or kids, I have adult kids, is that shows them, hey, you know, that was really bad. And if you come across something where you're not living in the way that you want, there's a way to change. It can, you can do it too. Because you just right. go, gosh, man, if my mom or dad or sibling or cousin or whatever can get through the way they were then to how they are now, okay, things are possible. Things
I just thought of a great example of that.
Yeah, what's that?
Your eldest daughter said she would start going to church if you quit smoking. How'd that work out?
And that worked out pretty good because she just got married the other month to someone that she met at church. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your grandkids.
Example.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing. And that actually speaks to today with this spring cleaning and your recovery. Like, are you spending time where it's fulfilling your life and living in your values and supporting your recovery? Like, what are you doing? Are you in the places around the people and in the activities that are going to bring joy and fulfillment and purpose to your life?
Right.
Like, think about those things. Even if, like, today or next month you find like one thing that you want to do, if it's volunteering or taking a class or showing up to help a neighbor who's struggling, who needs help cleaning their house or needs a meal, whatever the like tiny thing is, to start in the path of walking in a direction that's gonna help in your recovery, in your life, in your purpose.
Right.
You know, bringing hope to someone else is huge.
Oh,
you know?
Oh my God, yes. Huge. I mean, that's what, you know, that's what my recovery journey has been about for a long time. Of course, in the beginning, it was about just learning how not to be crazy,
right?
You know, how to live, quote, live life on life's terms. And I got to a certain point where, you know, my growth in the program seemed to be stalling out. I didn't feel the growth. I wasn't feeling as happy or as energetic, I would say, towards the program as I had been earlier on, because I'd worked the steps. I was, you know, life was getting better at a rapid pace.
And there is a certain amount of excitement in the beginning too.
Right, exactly. And what I discovered was I hadn't moved on to the next phase, which is sharing the message.
Right.
You know, to I was practicing the principles in all my affairs, but I was not sharing the message with another still suffering alcoholic.
Right.
And once I did that and started doing that, yeah, that made a huge difference in my life and in the growth of my sobriety journey.
Right.
You know, it was what I needed. And to this day, there are still things that I can think of that I could do to improve my sobriety journey, to keep growing in my sobriety journey.
Sure.
You know, it's not a sobriety in the AA program, you don't graduate.
Right, it's an ongoing process.
That's right.
It's a lifelong thing.
You keep on working. You can keep working it till they, as my friend says, till they throw dirt on you.
Right, that's just what I was picturing.
Yeah, exactly.
Till you're buried.
And that's, you know, and that's,
and then what you did, but then what you did in the example that you were to other people, to your family, your friends, and other people, lives on.
Right, exactly.
Those things encourage other people. One person in a family changing affects so many people in that family and those friends. Like, it just does.
Yeah, I heard a person talking the other day about death, and he said that, you know, we live on through how we have touched and affected other people.
Right.
And you're only really dead when the last person who knows about you dies.
That's fair.
You know, and you can leave, you know, you can leave a wake, you know, of destruction, or, you know, you can leave some good information and some friendship behind with you. You know, I lost a really close friend last week, very unexpectedly. And he was going to live on for a long, long time because of the way he was. And, you know, his generosity, his love of his God and his Christian belief system, and all the connections he's made over the years with people. I mean, to know him was to love him. There was, I can't think of a single time, I can't think of a single time where he, you know, had coarse words with anybody who were friends. I mean, he was a police officer, so there's going to be a handful out there that probably still going to carry that resentment for a long time. But then again,
that
he
was
still
more about
remembered.
What they did. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I wouldn't need to arrest you if you hadn't just hit that old lady over the head with a brick.
Right. Yeah.
You know, maybe you need to make better choices.
Yeah, we tend to like to blame other people, but really, when we look at it,
yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So. Yeah, you know, being able to create a wake of hope and, you know, charity and recovery, helping people recovery, certainly there's nothing wrong with that.
That's right.
I think we can all live with that. Mm-hmm. And another thing about spring cleaning, kind of getting back on track here because I wandered way off the beam, but... another thing about spring cleaning is once you complete it, it's an amazing feeling.
Yeah.
Like cleaning out the garage. You know, it's like, holy smokes, not only did I get rid of a bunch of crap that I thought I was going to need, but I don't really, and that stuff was like, why did I get this at all? Or, oh my God, I've been looking for that tool for 6 months, you know, sort of thing. Just reorganizing, you know, cleaning out. When the process is done, you might actually find you have room for more of stuff that really is more important for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like the guy who goes to the bar every night for 2-3 hours and has drinks with his buddies. Suddenly discovers when he stops doing that, that he's got more time to spend with his wife and kids. You know, maybe he wasn't a drinker like me. It was just something he did.
Right.
And, all of a sudden he realizes, that he actually enjoys spending time with his wife and his kids and
that's fulfilling.
Life's pretty good,
mm-hmm.
you know, in that lane.
Right.
So, you know, this kind of thing, I mean, we talk recovery here, but, you know, mm-hmm. certainly this is kind of a concept or an idea that anybody could use in their life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Don't hang on to things that are weighing you down or not being useful or activities that you maybe need to change or, yeah.
Right.
That's absolutely right. To anybody, this concept. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, addiction in a general sense of the word can relate to a lot of things.
It sure can.
You know, yeah. Eating habits, shopping habits.
Sure. It's really anything that we're doing that's, you know, covering up pain or hurts mm-hmm. or trying to numb out things. I mean, mm-hmm. I have definitely online shopped to feel better.
Right.
I have to
right.
not
get
think about something.
Rush, yeah.
Oh yes, absolutely. I don't even have to leave my house.
Mm-hmm.
So like these things are real and it's okay if I have the money for it. And hopefully I'm still circling back around and addressing what's actually going on because it's not going to go away, you know?
Right.
But if I'm spending money they don't have,
mm-hmm.
then that's not a good thing because that has effects. And then am I not dealing with what's going on? You know, I think that I definitely, you know, on a weekend, I let myself on Saturday sleep in. So I might sleep until 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a slow morning and I'm like cleaning and doing laundry and I'm watching a show,
mm-hmm.
you know, just kind of hanging out. But, you know, like you do need to have your downtime, you know, and that,
oh, yeah.
and that for me is Saturdays and a little bit of Sunday too, you know, so
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, that brings up something that I'm also guilty of is workaholism.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you, what do you think that's about? Why do you say that? Like, tell me more about when you say workaholism, are you talking about maybe the downsides of it? Like, what are you thinking?
Well, the downside of it, you know, is like any sort of addictive behavior. For me, it was a few things. And it really kicked in sobriety. Because I needed to make up for lost time, for lost money.
Right.
So I threw myself into work. There's nothing wrong with throwing yourself into work. But when you're throwing yourself into work to the detriment of other things, like working 40 hours of overtime in a week,
right.
you know, traveling and being gone for weeks at a time, which I did that too, I could have changed that. But this belief that if I didn't make up time, you know, make up the money for the time that I wasted mm-hmm. drinking,
mm-hmm.
that things were going to be horrible. And the truth is, all it did was, you know, I would come home, the dog would bark at me because he didn't recognize me.
Right.
And my wife would bark at me because there were dozens right. of things left undone that she couldn't
right.
do by herself.
Right.
And it interfered with the rest of my life. I mean, I honestly believe that, you know, two things about work. One, if you're smart, you work to be able to do the things you love to do. Also, if you enjoy what you do for a job, you never really have to work a day in your life.
Right.
You know, from what you've said, you enjoy what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't make it as arduous as, say, the guy working on the assembly line at GM. Putting left front tires on all day long, every day for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
you know, working towards a gold watch and a, you know, pension.
It depends. I mean, is he getting to listen to some Audible books?
Exactly.
I'm just saying.
Well, that's the thing. That's
some of the things that like you just know how to do like second nature. Like the last job that I had, I loved it because I still got to interact with people, but I could listen to Audible books and sermons and like all sorts of kinds of things. That was really
right.
cool. Yeah.
Right. And in my janitorial job now, that's what I get to do. I plug into YouTube or.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can even get to my Hulu and listen to programs that I like. You
I
know,
mean, you're getting a little exercise.
Yeah.
You're making stuff look nice.
Yeah.
It is a bit of an accomplishment, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, so workaholism, where you, like anything else, you know,
mm-hmm.
you can drink and have a cocktail or two at dinner and be a normal temperate drinker. You can go to work your 8 hours, maybe couple hours overtime here and there.
Sure.
And still be a really good employee. Mm-hmm. But if the rest of your life is being deprived of your presence, mm-hmm. because you're chasing money.
Right. Then that
might not be the healthiest thing for you.
What comes to mind when I think of someone staying at work longer and longer and longer is, are they doing it to avoid being at home? Are they doing it to avoid dealing with different problems in their lives, their kids, or whatever? So again, it kind of comes back to the behaviors and the things that we do.
Yeah.
Are they to avoid things? Are they to push away pain and you know what I mean, not deal with something?
Right.
Because I mean, I'm definitely guilty of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm more aware of it now in recovery that I've been able to look at these things and I have some tools to be able to notice
right.
if that's happening and then to be able to work on things, you know, and support people.
Yeah. Right.
So that's what I think of when I think of like workaholism or like someone just always being really, really busy is that what's going on?
Right.
You know,
and I think you nailed how I look at it is I have to look at my motivation for like everything
right.
I do.
That's great.
Motivation, am I doing
yes.
this because life sucks?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I doing this in exchange for money I need? Am I doing this to make a relationship better or worse?
Mm-hmm.
Because the motivation is, when I was drinking, I thought I was a very generous person, and probably to an extent I was, but my motivation was to get the strokes at the other end of
right.
it.
And that's, yeah.
I wasn't just doing it to do it and be a good person.
Mm-hmm.
If I helped an old lady across the street, I had to tell everybody about
it. Getting the kudos. And
right.
I think that's, again, something that we learn in recovery is you're walking alongside of people, you're giving back, you're volunteering time, whatever that looks like, putting on the coffee, setting up the books, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And over time, it becomes not about telling people, but it's just about the feeling
mm-hmm.
that we gain and what that does with our relationship with the other people that are there, and it grows and matures us to like just apply that to being normal in our lives.
Right.
And so like if I'm going to give somebody something, it's not about receiving in return or getting a bunch of kudos. It's just because we help each other,
right.
you know?
Right.
And so, and honestly, that like click and change in our lives can really open up then the ability for other people to be there for us as we become more generous.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We're going to attract that, you know?
Yeah. It's also learning how to practice humility.
Yeah.
And not making it always all about me.
Right.
Look what I did. You mm-hmm. know, look how cool I am. Look
right.
at my nice car. Mm-hmm. You know, you've seen my 97 Subaru Outback with one black eye in the front.
It gets the job done. That's
it
a
does.
Good fuel mileage car. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the jury's out on that particular one.
Let me ask
still.
You this. Have you ever had one sports car in your life? One sports car?
Several.
Okay. Then you're good. I feel like I had to have one sports car, and I did. And I loved
right.
it, and it was T-tops and the whole bit. And I feel good now. I
just
needed the one.
Trans Am?
It was like a Firebird.
Oh,
yes,
Firebird.
A Firebird.
Yeah, same
yes.
thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just gotta have one, you know.
I've had a 68 Mustang GT. I had a Corvair Corsa convertible with the big engine and convertible top. Multiple, way too fast motorcycles.
Mm. And you're still alive.
And yeah.
Don't tell my teenage daughters that they like want motorcycles, and I'm like, no.
Yeah. Well, in riding when I was growing up, but a little less intense. Riding up around here, not too bad, but down in the city where I grew up riding, yeah, it was a little riskier.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing.
But
it's harder to see motorcycles. It just is.
Yeah, it is. And people are unconscious and, they tend to make left turns in front of you. So you have to be hyper-vigilant.
Yes.
But beyond that, the idea that, having, all those vehicles I've ever had were strongly tied to my ego in one way or another.
Sure.
The 68 Mustang that I had that later in life. As a matter of fact, just got rid of it a few years ago to somebody, a young guy who's going to pump it up, hot rod it a little bit more, something I always thought about doing, but I kept it pretty stock because it was plenty fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you only have to go 70 on the highway around here to get a ticket.
Right,
so,
that's what I was
going to
say. All that's going to happen is you would have got a ticket.
Right.
They've been so tempting.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, I tempted fate. I can count on both hands the number of times, you know, I buried the speedometer on this vehicle or that vehicle and, you know, lived to tell the story. But, you know, again, you know, it's like ego. What's the deal? You know, I can get along with the rest of the world and drive the speed limit and not frighten people in my car or out of my car.
Exactly.
Hey, you know what? Speaking of frightening, we've run to time here.
Yeah.
So thank you again for coming up with this great topic.
Thanks.
And a reason for me to prattle on incessantly. And That's good. Your wonderful input on
Yes, thank you, Johnny. And thank you to our listeners for listening today. And remember that the 7th of May, the Family Support Group starts. And just give us a call at the LRC with any questions and to join us.
Number's 208-883-1045. And I'll close it out with the usual, you know, if you think you have a problem with substances or mental health, behavioral health issues, you probably do.